love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Fat Man.
I'm king, and they know it. When I snap my fingers, everybody say, show it. I am hot, and you're not. But if you want to hang with me, I'll give it one shot. Top that.
Luro. And Marvel 2K.
Yeah!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tim May, and you're listening to 126 of Comic Conversations, where we talk all things comics for the week of January 6, 2016. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Marvel 2K and Luro. Luro, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really good.
All right. And Marvel 2K.
I'm ready to do this.
I'm ready. All right, let's go into our first segment. As always, the lightning round. Okay, for lightning round this week, we have Paper Girls, Uncanny X-Men, Totally Awesome Hulk, and I am doing my solo review of Worst X-Men Ever. Guys, Paper Girls.
Everyone likes this book but us.
Yeah, I know. Even our buddy Chris, who sent in stuff for contest giveaways, loves Paper Girls. So.
Yeah, here's the deal. We don't get it.
Yeah, I honestly don't. Like, maybe it's just the Vaughn love, but I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, we like Vaughn. Well, we don't like, we don't really like We Stand on Guard, but overall, we like Vaughn. It's just this book. I mean, it's four issues. We've given it chances. There's nothing here I like. I don't really like any of the characters. I don't dislike the art, but I don't particularly love it. I don't care about the plot, which is okay.
And I shoulder the responsibility for this, because I'm the one who, when we first went over next week's comics, we overlooked it, and I was like, "Oh, this is a Vaughn series. We should try this." And
we kept reading it because everyone puts it over.
And yeah, it's Vaughn.
Everyone really likes this book. I'm not one of those people.
Yeah, so I fully admit it's just us, but you know, it's all three of us. So
it is what it is, baby. All right, let's move on to our next book, Uncanny X-Men, which I told you guys you weren't gonna like.
I felt cold reading this.
This was a good comic if you like fighting, which a lot of people do. I was horrifically bored by this, though. It was a comic about mutants fighting.
That's pretty much it. Like, if it sounds like we're leaving stuff out, we're not. If you haven't read Uncanny X-Men, that's all the book was about.
It was Magneto. There's this company that is cryogenically freezing mutants until a cure for the Terrigen Mist disease is found. And the reason why they're killing these people who work for this company who have these mutants and these cryogenics is on the premise that they're up to no good. We know it. There's no proof that they are, but... But apparently that's Magneto's motivation.
Yeah, I was telling Marvel, it does feel different from the other X-Men books. All the X-Men books feel different, and that's good. It's just, I don't like it, so.
And apparently Sabretooth is still the same way he was from after Uncanny Avengers, it seems like.
No, from Access. That's where that's
all. Access. Well, yeah, but.
Well, we found out this week that Age of Ultron hasn't been retconned either, so pretty much everything that happened still happened.
I mean they used Secret Wars to adjust a couple of things, but for the most part everything stayed for the most part the same.
Yeah.
Alright, next book.
Next book, Totally Awesome Hulk. Good book, but not a lot happened, so we bumped it up to lightning round.
He's having problems controlling the Hulk.
Yeah,
within
that's
him. Within him.
He fought monsters. The lady
Hellbender.
Yes, Lady Hellbender.
She's collecting them like they're Pokemon for a sanctuary.
Yeah,
she's
because
make them big.
Yeah, all these monsters are endangered monsters, and they put them on a planet and safe there. So convince them that's what she's doing, and then Fin Fang Foom appeared. So it's going to be Hulk and Lady Hellbender versus Fin Fang Foom.
Yes.
Which, fine. That's keeping up with the goofy tone of the story. That's I have absolutely no problems with this, but what am I going to say about it?
Come on. Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot that happened in this issue. I still have, you know, hope for the series. It's still a good series, but this issue was kind of a throwaway issue.
A little bit.
Okay, as long as we're talking all things wacky, I read Worst X-Men Ever. Just on a whim, I saw the title. I saw a couple of stories promoting it, and I was like, eh, why the hell not? I got free time, and I could squeeze it in. I read it. It's a good story. It's basically about this kid who just literally the textbook definition of a boring, normal kid. And I guess he finds out he's a mutant. He thought it was going to be the coolest thing ever. He's like, oh, I'm going to have mutant powers. I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to join the X-Men. And his parents are both mutants, so they say, presume, obviously, that he's going to be a mutant as well. So they send him to the Jean Grey school, and he talks to Beast, because I presume this happens before X-Men 600. So he talks to Beast. He runs them through the gamut of tests, and sure enough, he is a mutant, but his only power is that he can self-destruct. He can blow himself up, but the thing is, he can't reconstitute himself. So he's all, basically, you'd mean to tell me my only power is I can kill myself really cool. He's all, yeah. He's all, I would prefer just being a normal human if you ask me, but now I have to live here at the Xavier Institute. So.
Which is in limbo.
Well, this is prior to that. So this is, like I said, this is prior to even Beast as part of the series as well. So it's even prior to even all that stuff that happened,
post-Secret Wars. In the school, though.
So pretty much he's at the Xavier school because obviously they don't want him to accidentally kill himself with his powers. And then at the end of this issue, Forge, I guess, makes him a suit so he can fight with and be a proper X-Men. And they go off to go fight somebody, but Forge specifically tells him, don't use the suit yet. This is obviously something that while you're here at the school, we're going to teach you how to use it. He's like, training schmaining, and that's how the book ends out. So it's a pretty good book, all things considered. All right, let's move into this week's books. Takers?
It sounds familiar, but I don't remember.
It's Batman for the NES Stage 2.
Ah, okay.
All right, let's go over this week's books, which include, but are not limited to, Ultimates 3, Vision 3, Swamp Thing 1, Doctor Strange 4, Spider-Man and Deadpool 1, Archie 5, Invincible Iron Man 5, A-Force 1, Guardians of Infinity 2, Miracle Man 6, Spider-Gwen 4, Star Wars 14, Darth Vader 15, Sheriff of Babylon 2, and Exo Man of War 43.
Yay.
A healthy haul of books this week. Let's open this week's comics with Ultimates number 3. Writer Al Ewing, art by Kenneth Rockeford.
I wanted to open up something else.
Why? Too strong? Too strong of an opener?
Too strong of an opener. Can I do a flip?
Sure. What
do
you want to open?
I want to do Star Wars and Vader because it was the same comic.
Yeah, let's see.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, originally when I proposed that we do the review, we're going to do this as one review. So,
yeah, isn't trashing that, by the way. This was parts 5 and 6 of Vader Down. So
no, it was still a good book, but yeah, it was literally one story. So let me do the info for that then. Star Wars was obviously Jason Aaron and art by Mike Diodato. It's Darth Vader 15 was done by Kieran Gillian, art by Salvador Lacaro.
So Luke did not discover anything at the Jedi Temple.
No.
So Vader's on the planet and a Admiral Akbar's cousin.
Commander Carbon.
Yes, who has a robot body and 4 lightsabers because every robot in Star Wars apparently has 4 lightsabers.
Yes.
It turned out this was all a scam by him to get Vader killed so that he could be the Emperor's...
Lura, would you go as far as to say...
It's a trap!
It was, in fact, a trap, and it was a squid who set up the trap this time. So he's fighting Vader with his 4 lightsabers, which is kind of cool. Vader chopped off one of his arms, and we had that. Leia... I actually didn't understand this. Leia has a gun on Vader's head.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't kill him.
I think she was, well, yeah, I know.
She, like, She puts the gun on his head, and then she imagines, like, Alderaan exploding. And then she imagines Luke and all them dead, and then she doesn't shoot him, and she runs away. Maybe I didn't understand.
I think maybe she realizes she can't beat him in his current state, so it's better to retreat.
She was just going to shoot him in the back of the head. He was fighting someone else.
Well, he does a lot of other stuff that...
Guys, whenever anything questionable happens in the Star Wars universe, what's the justification? Force. The Force.
Force, so Vader was fighting Admiral Akbar's brother, and he was using the Force to tell her to run away.
No, the answer is just the Force.
Okay, well...
He didn't shoot her because of the Force.
That guy's, Akbar's friends, people, they go to get... I'm not going to say his name. They go to get Luke, because apparently... They knew that the Emperor wanted Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He also determined that Vader is here for another reason that he didn't tell us about. Vader kills that guy.
Yeah, and he also sabotages the ship that they used to kidnap Luke with the Force.
They're escaping with Luke. Vader doesn't want the Emperor to get Luke, obviously, because he wants Luke to join him, and together they can rule the galaxy, father and son.
Nice.
So I like the whole line. Yeah, and they're just like, oh, wow, Luke's really lucky. And they take it and they leave.
Don't they have, like, freaking Vader way too overpowered in this? Like,
yes,
way?
But I learned when playing Knights of the Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic 2, Force Unleashed 2.
Especially Force Unleashed.
In anything outside the movies, the Jedi are, like, 50 million times more powerful. It's only in the movies they are not fucking super badasses. Like, you know, Vader, if you get right down to it, his biggest strength move in the movies is he drops some fucking air ducts on Luke. That's really all he ever does with the Force. In this, he's fucking destroying planes, he's blowing up tanks, he's killing like 50 dudes at once. They're much more powerful in the outside the film media.
Which is odd.
Well, maybe Ray will flip that around.
Anyways, Leia ends up knocking out Dr. Aphra.
And they captured her.
Yeah, and they took her in a Millennium Falcon, and they left Vader on the planet, so.
Yeah, and she apparently, you know, I don't know, dies? Because...
No, I don't think she's dead, because...
She's never mentioned in the movies.
Well, maybe they'll have another book.
They must have discovered something in Empire that she gave up. But then again, she doesn't have a lot of information.
No, not really.
Because she didn't work for the Empire. She worked for Vader. Technically against the Empire. So.
All right.
Yeah.
A decent crossover.
Nothing fine.
Nothing great, but...
Yeah, I mean, some of those issues were, like, pretty fun, but...
Yeah, but like going forward with these Star Wars books, it's like, are we ever going to get something like earth-shattering happen? No.
Probably not.
No, but that was always going to be the problem.
Yeah, okay. All right, since you guys decided to call an audible, where do you guys want to go from here?
I don't care.
Or can I just go with my list as usual?
Yeah, just go ahead.
All right, let's go with my next book. Vision number 3, writer Tom King, art by Gabriel Hernandez-Walta.
Tom King is my favorite writer.
Yeah. He's even won me over.
This book is so fucking good. And I found out he writes that Omega Men book that everyone puts over.
Oh, now we got to read canceling. That.
Yeah, and he also wrote, I can't remember. Grayson, the Grayson book that I didn't buy because of the You Don't Know Dick. But then everyone who read it said, this is like the best book DC is publishing. He wrote that too. So this guy is a superstar and is going to be a huge deal in a couple years. By the way, on this issue, I didn't buy Deadpool Spider-Man, but if I did, I would have been fucking pissed.
As would I.
Because Deadpool Spider-Man, they included Vision 3 as like a free book, and they just stuck the entire issue in. I think because Vision is critically, it's getting really well reviewed, but it's not selling that good, and Marvel wants to push it. So they put it in a book with Spider-Man
and
Deadpool because those books sell, which is smart. I like that, except, you know, I would have been pissed if I would have bought both of them, not knowing. So,
but I get the feeling if you're buying Spider-Man, Deadpool, I imagine you don't read Vision.
Yeah. Also odd that they didn't put issue one in. They put the issue that came out this week.
That is odd.
Yeah. I thought that was weird, but you know, whatever. This issue was great. Vision takes his daughter to Tony Stark because he needs help fixing her up. And, you know, he has to do something where, like, they drain power from the city's power grid and they reroute it through Vision. And he has to, you know, do his phasing thing to get into her and move some shit around and shoot the power into her a certain way. Mm. And it's Tony's like, well, you turn off your pain receptors because, you know, this is a lot of energy. It's going to hurt a lot. And he's like, no, I can't do it because I need to be able to feel around in there. And he's like, okay. So he's shooting the power through him and it's going on way too long and she's not coming back. And Tony's like, okay, I'm going to shut it down now, Vision. He's like, don't fucking shut it down or I'll kill you.
He's like, you're my best friend. I came to you because I trust you more than anybody else. But if you turn that thing and my daughter dies, I will kill you.
Yeah. So he did it, and, you know, Tony's apparently just going to tell Cap or whoever that everything's fine, like everything went okay, but Vision brings his daughter back home. Oh, I left out at the beginning of the issue, there are some kids, like, and they're spray painting, you know, Socket Lovers Leave or something on their doorway. Miss Vision goes outside, takes one of the kids. Keep in mind, these are kids, and she fucking slams his head into the garage door. There's fucking blood and shit, and then scares them away. But pretty fucking violent. And then Vision comes home, brings the daughter. Everyone's happy. And he's trying to talk to her about what happened that day. And then he's like, hey, you know, Grim Reaper disappeared, but Mrs. Vision comes out in some sexy lingerie. And, she confuses Vision and gets him to stop talking about how Grim Reaper's dead by fucking him. So,
yeah.
Vision is in fact human or somewhat human then because he was fooled by this.
Yes. Like a typical man.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, I don't understand what Lady Vision is so worried about. She killed what? Grim Reaper in self-defense?
But she killed him and they're not supposed to kill.
I guess, but...
And she made up a lie, an elaborate lie. Yeah.
And she also just, you know, and of course the last scene they show in the book is their garage door with the fucking spray paint and then the blood from the little kid. So he's reminding you that, yes, this is creepy. Now, the side story was
Agatha Harkness,
Scarlet Witch's witchy trainer, who was dead and came back to life, and she had a vision of Vision.
She had a premonition.
Yeah, killing all the Avengers, all the X-Men. She saw Vision standing over the dead bodies of all the heroes. Now, me and Marvel talked about this, and I think it's not Vision who's going to go bad. I think it's going to be his wife. Now, this could be a double swerve because you felt the whole time that Vision is creepy, but the wife is the one who is much more violent. Now, killing Grim Reaper, you can defend, but slamming a 10-year-old kid's head into your garage door, that's a little harder to defend.
Yeah, but then she also in the premonition she brought Fantastic Four, which at least as far as a current payoff, we're not going to get that.
Well, she said it's in the future. So, but here's what I think is it's probably she saw Lady Vision who might have because they can you know they can change the way they look.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe she made herself look like Vision, and is going to be a bad guy. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm very interested in it, though. This book is fantastic.
Also, we were forgetting, remember in the last issue, someone is already aware that she has the Grim Reaper buried in her backyard.
Yes.
Remember, the phone.
We still don't know if that's like a supervillain or if that's just somebody who lives in the neighborhood.
Yes. Yeah, we don't know who that is.
But somebody's somebody's fucking with her. They just didn't deal with it this issue.
So,
although it might have put her more on edge.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, if for whatever reason why, if you're not reading Vision, by all means, stop, pause this recording and by all means read issues 1 through 3 of Vision.
Yeah, this book is so good.
All right, since we talked about it already, even though I want to talk about another book, we already teased it. Spider-Man Deadpool number 1, writer Joe Kelly, art by Ed McGuinness.
Oh, I didn't read it.
I didn't read it either.
Oh, you guys are smart then.
Well, you told us not to read it.
Yeah, I specifically told you guys to read it because it reads, even though it's in continuity, it reads like a book made for people that don't read the current Marvel line. It was in this specific issue, it was Deadpool and Spider-Man fighting Dread Dormammu in hell.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it was written by a guy who hasn't written Deadpool for 20 years, so.
So, yeah, it was really wordy, but at the same time, yeah, I still got the impression that this was written primarily for people that don't read comics or people who just read the Deadpool stuff. So
makes sense.
Yeah, you guys may have done yourself a service by not reading this book. All right, let's move on to our next book, Ultimates number 3, writer Al Ewing, art by Kenneth Rockerford.
This continues to be pretty good.
Yeah, speaking of great Marvel books,
the Imperial Guard, the Shi'ar Imperial Guard, went to the planet Galactus bought back to life, and Oracle used her powers. You know, because they're trying to figure out why is everything alive on this planet. She uses her powers to find out that it was, in fact, Galactus who did this. This causes, what's his name, Guardian?
Yes. Or,
Gladiator.
Gladiator. Gladiator calls Black Panther, he calls the Ultimates to bitch them out. Or, no, sorry, he calls Captain Marvel because Captain Marvel is stationed on Alpha Flight, which is now a satellite, but she's like the diplomatic ambassador.
Yeah, it's like remember when they had S.W.O.R.D.? Isn't that the same thing, basically?
Kind of, but by the way, it's called Alpha Flight, and we saw Puck in this issue. He's working on Alpha Flight.
As if this book couldn't get any better.
Well, Vindicator will be there, too, somewhere bopping around. But yeah, Puck's working up there. But he calls her to bitch her out and said, you know, people can't just unilaterally take actions like this. Like, Galactus is a cosmic force. You can't just change what he does without telling us. Black Panther and Blue Marvel determined this was because he was jealous that they didn't think of it. And they pretty much just said, oh yeah, that's serious, but fuck them, we're doing the right thing. Then they explained to everyone, okay, so we solved the Galactus problem, but another big problem is time is completely broken.
Yes, and they brought up the whole
Age of Ultron.
Yeah, Age of Ultron.
Yeah, they said even after the Age of Ultron event, when we discovered time is broken, these things are still happening. You know, they showed the X-Men bopping around with the current day versions. They showed the Rawhide Kid flying around on a little space vehicle. I don't know what that was from. They showed Thing doing something in the past that. Time travel's bad, and then they made the funny comment of, you know, the real problem is Doom's time travel technology. And they're like, so we thought maybe we should go back in time and stop Doom.
But first, we actually need one of his time machines, and we don't have one of them just lying around. So
They said that would cause the problem of we're going back in time to change something that happened.
And they got to go outside of the time, too.
Yeah, because they need to observe it. So they had to go outside of the known universe. So
when I brought this up to Lural, so you mean to tell me that Nightmask had to evolve into an embryo in order to traverse the multiverse, and they had to use the Living Tribunal's body to build an arc to do the same exact thing, but yet in this issue, Miss Chavez is sitting there. Over some freaking Pym particle revelation.
So what they did was they had the new Giant Man, who is a computer programmer. This was very much comic book science, explained that, well, you know, the Pym particles, it's just, you know, it's a genetic thing. But if you look at it a certain way, genetics are just like coding. So I recoded these Pym particles, and now you can put them in your spaceship, and your spaceship will be able to travel, and it'll be protected from all this stuff. It was bullshit science. they wanted to get the new Giant Man in something, and they thought, okay, this will work, and we'll come up with this thing. Now, as for the whole, they needed Living Tribunal skinned ship to do this, they needed the Living Tribunal skinned ship to survive the end of creation.
Ah.
They are going outside creation, which, number one, it's not necessarily the same thing. Number two, they didn't say there's nothing out there. They just don't know what's out there. Because they explained how the Marvel Universe is organized. There's our universe. Then there's the, I think they called it the Super Flow, which for DC Wildstorm fans, it's the Bleed. It's even red. It's the thing that runs in between the multiverses. Mm-hmm. Then outside that is the, what was it called? It's not the Negative Zone.
Yeah, they called it something else, but I can't remember what it was.
The Neutral Zone?
It might be the Neutral Zone.
It was, yeah, it was some kind of wacky new dimension. Yeah, that
and that's where antimatter and matter things coexist. That's outside all of the other dimensions. And then outside that is where they're going, but they don't actually know what's out there. America Chavez is teleporting them through these things. And I don't know if this is going to come back, but she's having problems doing this.
They confronted the Anti-Man, who apparently has a history of the Blue Marvel,
which I am completely unfamiliar with. And the Blue Marvel is,
fairly new.
He's a fairly new character. So this could be something that's been dealt with before, or it could be new storyline. But this guy apparently killed his family or something.
Yeah, I looked it up. It is, in fact, called the Neutral Zone.
Okay, so yeah, the Neutral Zone and then the whatever's outside the Neutral Zone, which no one knows, that's where they're going.
Anti-Man is, in fact, a pre-existing character.
Okay, well, but this...
It's a guy they introduced with him when he was in the Marines or something. I guess back when he was a superhero.
Okay. So, but I mean, this was another, you know, issue of Ultimates where Ultimates are going to be the big picture superhero team. This is definitely big picture stuff. They're trying to fix time, which is a pretty big...
This team, with ease, accomplishes previously nigh impossible tasks with relatively ease.
Yeah, and it's funny because they're not, like, you look at them and you're like, oh, there's no Iron Man, there's no Thor, there's no, but they still come off as incredibly capable because, you know, you got Black Panther, who's a genius. You got Blue Marvel, who's a genius.
And pretty much Superman. So
yeah,
as far
and
as,
then you have, yeah, so you have a genius Superman. Then you have, Spectrum, who's kind of ridiculously powerful, actually, and they were toying in this issue with her powers changing. You have Captain Marvel, who's very, very powerful. You have America Chavez, who's the new character, who is not as experienced and not as powerful, but she's very useful to them in the things she can do.
Yeah.
So it's a smart team that they've put together. Everyone has a purpose, and they show everyone doing something.
And Giant Man to a degree, and then
he's not on the team. In fact, he wanted to go with them, but
they're like, nah, maybe you need to start slow before.
Yeah, they told him, they're like, Blue Marvel's like, have you ever thought of Cthulhu?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, no, not yet.
And he's like, no, not yet. He's like, all right, maybe do that first, and then you can come with us outside the known universe.
And then as they leave, he's like, oh, I gotta fight some Cthulhus.
Yeah. No, this is a really good book. This book is, this is their best team book. Definitely.
Yeah. And then, Vision is probably their best solo book.
Yeah.
All right. As long as we're doing a stack.
Oh, by the way, that reminded me of something about solo books. we didn't mention this in news, but remember the deal with, Karnak?
Oh, yeah. We found that out. I found it out today. The reason Karnak has been gone so long is, Axel Alonso said the artist, he had some personal problems, which he's obviously not going to get into. It's the guy's personal life. But, you know, there is a reason it hasn't come out. The artist isn't there, and they didn't want to put a different artist on it. So,
because funny, he said, the one thing I'm thinking with Karnak, I'm like, the art's not that great. It's all right.
It's good, though. It fits the book.
Yeah, it fits the book perfectly.
Yeah, it fits the tone of the book. So they want to keep that, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. He said it's coming back in February, first week of February, and then it should be coming out on time after that.
Okay. That's cool. And then also because Ellis is writing it, and God knows how many issues that he's actually written.
He's probably written 6, and then it's going to be done.
And then Brian Wood's going to write it, right?
Yep, Brian Wood's going to come in, swoop in, save the day.
All right, let's keep our top-heavy show going with Swamp Thing number 1, writer Len Wein, art by Kelly Jones.
This is very different from what Swamp Thing has been the last 20 years.
Ah.
But that's because this is done by the guy who created Swamp Thing. So, and it reads like it was done. Now, I don't mean that as a negative, but this very much reads like an older comic.
It reads like something from out of the 80s or late 70s or something.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It reads like a 70s comic, but slightly updated.
Yeah, updated version. Because like, it has the way the narrative bubbles are and the way, you know, you had that splash page with the title of the issue with the creators at the bottom, like, you know, one of those old school comics.
Yeah, and it somewhat kept with – okay, here's the thing. People who listen to the show know this. I'm not keeping up with current DC. I don't know Swamp Thing's current –
origin.
Origin. I don't know his current storyline.
Well, we had a very quick introduction to the current character, and it doesn't seem all that different than the original.
The biggest change that I think is different was – He was saying he's Alec Holland, and the original Swamp Thing, we found out he wasn't Alec Holland. Alec Holland died, and like his consciousness kind of was sort of copied onto Swamp Thing, but not really. He was his own deal. That has apparently changed. Mm-hmm. But they talked about the Parliament of Trees and stuff, and he separated from them, which I think is from his solo series, so this was in continuity.
Ah, okay.
And the crux of the book is he's going to be dealing with DC's Zombie, which is another fucking character pulled out of obscurity. Zombie, by the way, is a guy who looks like a zombie. That's his gimmick. And in this issue, there's a kid, he went to school, his parents came to the swamp.
That's such a ridiculous premise.
Yeah, which I don't think they did a good job of explaining why they're like, oh, something's happened to our son. I have to find Swamp Thing.
Yeah, why Swamp Thing?
But they found Swamp Thing because the dad fell in some quicksand and Swamp Thing had to save him. Swamp Thing goes to the university. What they did was there was a doctor there.
You know what's funny about this? You can tell this is old, like they've written in like an old school book, because in what universe does a weird university conduct an experiment where, hey, we're going to kill you and then bring you back to life?
It wasn't official. He didn't have the professor did not have approval to do this. And the group who did it, it wasn't just a classroom. It was like a club who was working with the professor after school. So it wasn't endorsed by the university as far as I know, but the professor was obsessed with like bringing shit back to life. So, to do this, he needed to test on a live subject. So they apparently fucking drew their names out of a hat. This family's kid drew it. He died and didn't come back to life, they thought.
Well, he did. He's haunting the school as a zombie.
Yes, he is killing all of the people who were there when they did this to him.
Although I don't know why. This is what he signed up for.
Because I don't know.
He knew the risks.
Like a monster?
He knew the risks.
Well, he thought he was just come back to life, but now he looks like a horrible monster.
Yeah, he had to imagine there was the idea that maybe he wouldn't come back to life.
I imagine getting picked to do this and going through with it.
Well, don't get caught up on that, though, because the point is Swamp Thing shows up at the school and he fights the zombie, and the zombie rips him in half because Swamp Thing keeps putting over how strong he is. You know, I've never fought anything as strong before. The problem with him ripping Swamp Thing in half is we already established earlier in the issue that Swamp Thing can just grow himself back together.
Correct.
Like, Swamp Thing doesn't have internal organs. He's made of plants. Ripping him in half doesn't hurt him. It doesn't do anything. So Swamp Thing's going to be, also it's the first issue of six, so Swamp Thing will knit himself back together and try to go stop the zombie.
God, I forgot this is a limited series. Oh, now I'm bummed.
Well, no, that's good, because how long could this go on for?
As long as I want to.
But it's so old school, like it should be. And this is, six issues is a long time for an old school storyline like this. So I imagine we're going to mix in other shit.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much leeway he has, because, you know, they're obviously currently doing things with Swamp Thing. So, I don't know, but it was a fun read. It was incredibly easy to read. It went really quick, largely because it's, you know, it's kind of written in that old school style. The art was good.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, Swamp Thing has a tendency, because of the way the stories have been written for so long, to be like kind of dark looking, like a little dingier. And they didn't really do that in this. It was a brighter version of Swamp Thing, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, clean lines and stuff, but you know, no, it was enjoyable. We're gonna, everybody liked it, so we're gonna finish it out.
Yeah, thank you for recommending this book, because I liked it.
I just wanted to read some Swamp Thing.
Okay, let's keep up with the theme of top heavy. Doctor Strange number 4, writer Jason Aaron, art by Kevin Nolan.
This is the best issue.
Yes, the best of all the four they've released is the best Doctor Strange book.
The first three issues were all about building Doctor Strange's house, and dropping hints of what the story was. This is when the story really kicked in, but they still did Doctor Strange development in it. So yeah. It worked as a story. They developed the supporting cast a little more. We got some with Wong. We got some with his new librarian.
Yeah.
Very good issue. Moved really quick. This was a really quick read. And had a lot of words in it too, but
they recapped Ancient One teaching him on what the consequences of using magic has on a magician. Apparently, the more magic you use, the more of a price you're gonna pay. And that leads to him puking a lot. And you know, magic people convert. You know, like I guess when you're full of magic, he basically can't eat regular food for the most part. He has to eat this magical dingy crap.
Yeah, and it looks disgusting.
Yes.
And it doesn't taste good either. So.
And the more magic he uses, the more he has to eat it.
But he's also getting sick.
Yes, because he's using a lot of fucking magic.
Yeah, they're basically trying to show you Doctor Strange does in fact pay a cost for the things he does.
Yeah, it's not easy.
It's just they never dealt with it before because he hasn't had his own book.
Well, he's had his own book, but.
But he also said they used it because they showed him training, when he was originally Doctor Strange, and the Ancient One's telling him, okay, you gotta punch me in the face.
Hell, that was great.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't wanna do it. And he's like, come on, just punch me in the face, pussy, or you're leaving. So Strange, who has the fucked up hands, punches him in the face, and he of course hurts his hand, and the Ancient One uses this to explain there's nothing without a cost. Ever. Like, you know, the harder you hit me, the more you're going to hurt your hand, which is what's going on with Strange and the magic. But Strange at one point said, never stop punching, which is a really clear indication of what his character is. He doesn't care how much this hurts him or how uncomfortable it is. It's what he has to do. He's going to do it no matter what. So it basically just one line put him over as this very dedicated hero who will do anything no matter the cost to himself.
Including eating something that smells like leprosy, which I didn't know that had a smell.
That's, yeah, he did mention that. He goes, or he said it tastes like leprosy.
Although, I don't know how you can reduce a sickness like that to a taste.
Well.
He ends up in the temple with tomb. Apparently it's underwater somewhere in, what, Indian Ocean or something?
Yeah, it was in the Indian Ocean.
It was originally supposed to be everything's lava on fire, and there was supposed to be a bunch of booby traps, but when he went there, everything was extinguished, and everything was laid bare for him to walk in.
Yeah, and he's being attacked, and it's not magic, it's technical machinery, so apparently those Witchfinder folks already started their attack, because they're like, oh, they're here, remember he said? Mm-hmm. All his books started dying, because the magic from those worlds where those books are from were killed off.
Yeah, that's why you went to Watoom.
Yep.
So curiouser and curiouser the direction of Doctor Strange, but I like it.
And they did mix in when he was in the magic bar because he called everyone together to tell him, you know, I've been to, like, the Sorcerer Supremes from every dimension are dying. And he went to Limbo or whatever and used a spell that's used to call them all together, and literally no one showed up.
Oops.
So he was talking to all the magic users left and just basically saying, you know, be careful. Let us know what's going on because people are coming for us.
Yep.
Coming for you. Mm. All right. Next book, Archie number 5, writer Mark Waid, artist not Fiona Staples.
This is good, but we talked about not reviewing it anymore.
Good. Because Veronica Fish.
I don't hate the book.
No. I'll continue to read this, too. I'm not going to come on the podcast and give an update of a romance comic.
We thought going forward with Mark Waid, the book might be different, but really it's just falling back into its own ways. It's pretty much the same Archie book that it's always been since forever.
But better written. I mean, it is updated. It is well written. It's very well written. The art is not Fiona Staples, but I don't think the art is bad.
No, Veronica Fish is capable, but the thing is, I was sold on this book with the idea that it was going to be a super book with Mark Waid and Fiona Staples. This is the second issue now where we haven't had Fiona Staples, and I'm under the impression she's not coming back.
So am I, but even if she did, this isn't the kind of book I want to talk about every week.
True that.
In this one, Betty and Jughead. They get Reggie's help to break Archie off from Veronica because they think she's evil. However, all of his plans led them to discover that Veronica is actually not that bad of a person.
No. And it kind of backfired a little because he tried to play off like, oh, we're going to make her act all bitchy in front of him, and then that'll turn him off to her.
Well, the Jughead brings up the fact that Archie hates – the one thing Archie hates more than anything in the world is a bully. And then they said this is a situation where Veronica is made to look like a bully, but the fact of the matter is she comes off really a nice person wanting to help somebody out, so it really backfired. And then the worst part was Archie found out about the plan somehow, and Archie was really hurt by that. He's like, why didn't you guys –
the fact that they would do that.
Yeah.
You know, they're not doing a very good job of like, Veronica hasn't – she's never come off as a bad person, really. So she kind of has.
She treats Archie like a dog.
Well, but part of that is because, remember, she's
she's a rich girl, and it's what she knows. But
no, not just that. It's also because, remember, he sabotaged her dad's shit, and she's like – she covered for him, so –
I think throughout the story we're gonna get a softening of Veronica. Like you're gonna see that there's more to her than just, you know, what's on the surface of her being kind of a stuck up rich girl. You're gonna see more and more of that, which
I kinda feel that the Betty comes off worse.
But they had to do that, because we talked about this before. When I said everyone's automatically just going to root for Betty, what they've done here is they showed Betty being unfair. But even then, they kind of tempered it with if you had only witnessed what they had seen from Veronica, you would assume she is a horrible person who is using Archie. That was the only thing you could have assumed. It's just, you know, the reason Archie was mad was, what does that say about what they think about him that he would spend that much time with a person like that?
Yeah, exactly.
So the main thing Betty did wrong was she thought very little of Archie. So you can still have the, except now it's going to be more like Betty pining for Archie, and that makes her a weaker character than she has been. And I don't know if I like that, but whatever. I'll keep reading it. I just don't know if we're going to cover it unless Fiona Staples comes back and it's a fantastic issue. And
no, like I've been talking to you off air, there's a bunch of books that we don't read that I, you know, in the future I want to make time for. And with books like this out there, it's like, yeah, is there anything wrong with this book? No, but at the same time, there's other books I'd rather be, you know, devoting more time to.
Yeah, but like I said, this was written well. This wasn't bad. This continued along with everything else. It's just, it's not the kind of book we want to cover every week.
All right. Next book, Invincible Iron Man number 5, writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by David Marquez.
Let me get my complaint out of the way. This artist draws everyone as the most attractive human beings on Earth.
Is that a bad thing as far as when it comes to ladies?
Because when there is a plot point that Mary Jane is so super hot, everyone hits on her, but she looks exactly like every other woman in the comic, your art is actually negatively impacting the story. Because I'm looking at Mary Jane, and I'm like, she's got the same body as Madame Mask. The only difference between these two is she has fucking red hair. Yeah, otherwise, and she looks exactly the same.
Yeah, and the chick that Tony's dating, supposedly.
Yeah, she's like a scientist, but she's also super fucking hot. And it's, you know, I'm not saying you have to have these fucking ugly trolls running around in your comic, but it's just, don't make her being hot that central to it. Also, aren't they, well, they're back in, are they back in New York or are they in LA?
No, I think they're in LA or San Francisco or something.
Really? I just assumed it was New York, but.
Well, California is the fucking capital of America with fucking plastic surgery and shit. There are a million people running around who look exactly like Mary Jane. So don't give me this bullshit about how put on you are because you're hot.
Well, then again, wasn't Mary Jane's club in New York?
It was, but remember, in this one she moved.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I think it is out of New York because if it's in New York, then you have to keep involving Spider-Man.
Yeah, so it's got to be in California.
Yeah, and he made her basically his PR agent, which his reasoning for this actually made a lot of sense in story. You know, she has he doesn't know she was well, he does know she was married to Peter.
Wait, well, she never was, though.
Yeah, remember? She never was.
Oh, yeah, she never was. You're right. He doesn't know how she has connections to superheroes, but he knows she has connections to superheroes. And he said, you know, my business side, that's run by, you know, that's run over here, and this is run over here. He's like, but my brand, like me, I got no one managing that, and I can't do it myself. So that's going to be your job. So he hired her for that. After him and Doom fought Madame Mask, turned out she was possessed by a demon.
Yes. And they had to bring in Doctor Strange.
Yes, they did in fact bring in Doctor Strange. However, Doom escaped. Well, he didn't escape. He was being a good guy. Doom left before Strange got there. So Iron Man's telling him, like, oh, yeah, Dr. Doom helped me out. And Strange is like, yeah, sure he did. He's like, no, he really did. And he's like, yeah, okay.
He's. I don't discount the fact that maybe Doom's maybe turning a turnover for a new leaf. But also at the same time, keep in mind that I'm not completely sold on it just yet.
Yeah, but Strange did say he had to come help him because they're facial hair bros.
Oh, that was the best part, because initially we saw in issues before, he begrudgingly gave him the high five for being facial hair bros. Fist bump
for facial hair bros, and then he actually referred back to it, which made Tony very happy.
See, I have the quote right here in front of it. He said, we're awesome facial hair bros. And then Tony responds, wow, all of this was totally worth it just for that.
I like the way his face was.
His eyes are all lit up and he has the faceplate up.
He couldn't believe it. Yeah.
Oh, but by the way, Dr. Strange, he did believe him that Dr. Doom was there. It's just...
Well, he may be thinking maybe Dr. Doom's playing the long game as far as doing something nefarious, but at the same time...
Because his thing was, if he does want to turn over a new leaf, in fact, you know, he's like... I think he's more skeptical of whether he's a good guy.
As they should be.
I think he
should be.
Yeah, he should be, of course.
Dr. Doom's been a villain forever. Also, his name is Dr. Doom. You wouldn't trust him either.
Oh, by the way, they are, in fact, in California. They are in...
oh, thank you, Marvel.
Is in, yeah, it's in Marina Del Rey, California.
Oh, okay. That's not too far from here. All right, cool. All right, let's move on to our next book. A-Force number 1, writer G. Willow Wilson, art by George Molina.
me and Marvel disagreed on this. I think me and Fat Man will too.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna agree with you, dude.
I really liked this.
Oh nope, I'm there with Marvel.
Yeah, I think so. I really like this.
Let me just point out, I didn't think it was really that bad of a book, but I don't care about America Chavez. I don't care about Captain Marvel. I don't care about Dazzler. I don't care about Singularity.
No, I don't doubt that I could care about these characters, but G. Willow Wilson writing these books, the way she writes them, I don't care about these characters, like, at all. And I don't care that they're a team, and I don't care about Singularity.
Or Nico. Okay, so
Nico and Dazzler weren't even in the comic, so you can't.
I don't care, but they will be.
It's not fair to complain about them yet.
I don't care about Singularity.
And by the way,
Singularity's the worst.
By the way, the internet liked this book, so everybody agrees with me.
Yeah, they also agree with you that Paper Girls is a great book.
No, they don't agree with me on that, but they agree with me on this, so I'm using the internet to point out that I'm right. What I put over to Marvel was, this was a really good team building book. Because what they started with was, they started with the least developed character, which was Singularity. And this is the only book we've read that has actually directly grown out of something that happened in Secret Wars. Because in Secret Wars...
Not quite, because Spider-Man 2099 has that Captain America 2099.
But the focus of the book, the jumping off point of Spider-Man 2099, was not because of what was going on in Secret Wars.
And Iron Man has
carried
Doom.
Over a character from Secret Wars.
And what else? Extraordinary X-Men has Old Man Logan.
Yeah, that carried over Old Man Logan,
but you guys aren't listening to what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. I heard you saying in the sense that she's the central point to the entire story,
and she's the only one who remembers Battleworld. she was never a character here. She was only a character. She was a character created in Battleworld. So she shows up in our universe, and she knows that She-Hulk and Medusa and such are all her friends, and they're all on a team together. So she goes to see them. She first sees Captain Marvel.
Well, I got the impression reading this book that they weren't on a team. They were all off doing their own thing, and she kept talking to them as though they were a team.
Yes, she was, but that's what I'm saying. She was talking to them as if they were a team, because where she came from, they were her friends and they were a team. And she's coming to terms with the fact that she's in a different world. She didn't understand that at first. So she goes to see Captain Marvel, and while Captain Marvel's sort of nice to her, she has no fucking idea who she is. She goes to see She-Hulk, same thing. She doesn't know who she is. So she's having to deal with that. She's seeing Medusa, she doesn't know who she is. So you got that stranger in a strange land thing going on. Very powerful character, but she's also kind of young and kind of naive, and she doesn't really understand what's going on. She just wants to set up the way things were in her world from how she remembered it. Also, especially with Medusa, the characters are very different, and she perceives them as not being quite as happy.
That's cute.
So she wants to bring them together. She's a very cute, like, sort of Miss Marvel-ish character, but she's sort of like that in that she's young and she's a little naive, but she's even younger. So it's different. You're basically dealing with an 8-year-old girl here, was your focal point character. So she's trying to bring that team she remembers back together, which is going to make sense as trying to get all these people together, because without her to draw them together, a lot of these people would have no reason to interact with each other.
I'm curious where with post-Secret Wars, where this leaves Captain Universe. Because we see, what's her name? What's the name of the main character from this already? I immediately just forgot and I had to pull it.
Singularity.
Yeah, I assume Singularity is supposed to be what... Because when I first saw that character, I just thought it was the new interpretation of Captain Universe. But am I right in thinking that?
We didn't really get a lot into what she was in that book either.
She should just be she may be just a character unto herself, and just because she looks that way doesn't mean she necessarily represents something like Captain Universe.
Yeah, I mean, she could just be a new character.
True.
But I don't know, but I mean, if you have to get these characters who don't really fit together right now into a team, and you want to do it in some way where it's not contrived that it's an all-female team, and I think what she's doing really, really works for this.
Yeah, but for me, I wasn't completely – I didn't much care for the Singularity character in the original A-Force series. So I'm like, the fact that they brought her back, I'm like, ah, I still don't care about her. You can focus on her all you want. I'm still not going to care.
Well, they never focused on her before, though, and now they are. So you have to give it a chance.
No, I don't. Well,
you don't have to. You could stop reading it. But, I mean –
I like how you said you have to.
I know.
to decide if you actually like.
Well, you don't have to.
You need to give them a chance to develop a character because right now it is an undeveloped character, and they need. You know, it takes time. Unless you're Chip Zdarsky and you're doing Shockit and Linda, he built them up in one issue. But you know, he had to deal with all the other characters here. I think this is going to be a good book. I really, really think it's going to be a good book.
Marvel, are you going to keep reading this or no?
No.
Okay, good. Smart man. I think I'm going to join you there.
Okay, I'm going to lightning round it, and I predict this is better than half the books we read.
Okay, and if it turns around, I've been the guy
How
who...
How are you going to know if it turns around when I like this issue so
Because when
much?
You keep putting it over, like, remember Wolverine? I didn't read it the first two issues, but you kept putting it over, and I eventually picked up and read it. So if this is the same gimmick and you keep putting it over every single week, I'm going to pick it up.
I will be lightning rounding this because okay. I did like it and I want to see what she's going to do with it.
All right. Let me know if it consistently get good reviews from you, then I'll pick it back up.
Okay. Well, you'll have to wait and see.
Exactly. See, maybe it might pay off and I might be right for once. Never know. No, all right.
I'm always right, dude. Come on.
All right. Next book, Guardians of Infinity number 2. Writer Dan Abnett, art by Carlo Barbieri.
Okay, I'm going to get my complaint out of the way right away again. So they did the two superhero teams fight before they realize they're having a disagreement. Mr. Abnett thinks it's acceptable to do this if you have the characters point out how stupid it is that you're doing it. He is incorrect. Just because you had two pages with funny lines about how dumb this was, including, I believe, Drax saying, this is the stupidest fight we've ever had. That doesn't make it okay because you fucking did it anyway. I understand why you did it. I 100% understand why you do this. Everyone does it. When the two superhero teams meet up, they always fucking fight. And they have for 50 goddamn years.
And they'll do it for 50 years after this.
And the only development we've had in those 50 years was like in this issue where they make fun of it. That doesn't make it okay. And there are too many characters.
Yes.
There are too many characters. And I know it's going to get pared down. But fuck, pare it down because we've got the original Guardians. We've got the Guardians 3000. And then we've got a fucking another group of characters who are mixed in, who are tied into the villains.
And I don't even know who the villains are.
The villains are some sort of robot.
You gotta think about
things.
It.
Yeah, they're like some kind of robot things that like capture people and put stuff in them that makes them up. They're the Borg. They're fighting the Borg. The time traveling Borg.
Okay,
By the end of the issue, they found out that they had, they were actually on the same side and decided to team up. And then we had another fantastic backup.
Yeah.
By the same fucking writer who's writing this.
I don't get his backups are great.
If he's, because here's, I know what's going on. The backups are single character stories that don't have big ideas behind them. They're character based. The main plot is plot based. So half the book, he's getting across the overall big picture plot. And then the backups are smaller character focused stories. Those are always going to read better in the short term because you can do something with a character and tell you something about a character very quickly. If you're doing a long-term storyline, you can't resolve it in one issue because he's doing an arc.
Yeah.
It might read better as a whole, but these are designed to be read well in a small chunk.
Yeah, if it wasn't for this backup, I'd say let's just drop this book, but the backup was pretty great. Was it a Rocket story or was it Rocket and a group?
It was a Drax story.
Yeah, it was Drax.
With Rocket.
Yeah, with Rocket.
Drax went out drinking with the Space Knights, apparently, because he was depressed because it was the...
anniversary of his being...
It was either the anniversary of his family's death or, like, it was his wedding anniversary and it reminded him that his family was dead. He didn't actually totally say, but he went out to fight and drink, and he met up with the Space Knights. No ROM, because they don't own ROM.
Oh.
But they own other Space Knights. He got drunk with one of them. They left to go fight. Air quotes, he's gonna fuck her. But they got captured by something, which puts people into a dream state where they get exactly what they want so that it can suck their life out. Rocket meets up with the Space Knights. They find this out. They go fight him. They're showing his dream with this girl. They're married. They have a bunch of kids. Everything's perfect. But they both realize this is not actually happening. This is a dream. Rip their stuff out, and then they're saved. And then Drax is sitting on the spaceship looking all sad. Rocket realized what was going on, and then the story ended. It shows that Abnett is capable of writing very well. But as I said, he's doing a big picture thing in the first part. So at some point, because I know he's a good writer, I think the main plot is going to catch up in terms of quality. We're going to pare down that cast, and then it's going to be a lot better because his strength is with characters. And right now you can only do so much when you got 50 fucking characters bopping around your book. He's going to pare down the cast. That part will be better, but these backups will continue to be good every month.
I don't know about that, homie. You know who's writing the next backup?
I thought he's writing all of them.
Nope. They got a guest writer to write the next backup, so I don't know.
Sam Humphries?
No. Someone with no experience writing comic books or not writing a big-time comic book. No. Not that far off, though, as far as someone with letters for names.
Just tell me.
DMC.
What?
Yes. The former rapper, one half of Run DMC. Apparently he's written comic books before, but nothing to this degree. So I'm like, I'm of the idea it's not going to be any good.
Wow, that's interesting.
Run DMC.
He's gonna write about, Groot's failed rap career? Fuck, I'll read that.
Yeah, I'll still read it, but I'm paring down my expectations.
Oh, by the way, the backup wasn't Abnett. The backup is Robbie Thompson.
Oh, okay. Well, it was him in the first one, so I just assumed it kept up.
Okay.
Well, that
explains that.
Never mind.
Okay, let's see what our next book will be, gentlemen. It is Miracle Man by Gaiman and Buckingham.
The end of the Golden Age.
Yes.
By the way, I pointed out to Marvel in the backups on this, they had a hand-typed note on a typewriter.
Wow.
Gaiman's original note to Eclipse Comics on his plan for Miracle Man. And this was the end of the Golden Age, which he described very well. And then the Silver Age is about the children of the gods. So it's like 20 years later, and it's all the people who've now lived in Miracle Man's world for a period of time. And then it had the Dark Age.
It's 9 years, apparently, is what's best.
And then it said the Dark Age, and the only thing he had under that was, things go bad. That was his entire write-up.
Oops.
So this was about
anniversary of the time when Miracle Man took over the world.
Yeah, and they apparently have like a period of mourning where the people who are around London, at least, they all go through what they call the killing fields, which is, you know, where Bates went nuts and fucking killed everybody. And, you know, they'd said before they left the destruction, they left the dead bodies, they didn't fix anything. And the people go through and, you know, they put flowers on they try to find their family members' dead bodies and they put flowers there. It sounds very depressing. But then they have like a multiple day party called Carnival.
And also
they have these all over the world also.
They also showed what the members of the characters from the last five issues have been up to. They were all in this.
Well, because they were all from around this area.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, it was just a tying up of it. There wasn't a lot of the more creepy stuff. There was one thing. Okay. So there are people who, I guess most of them have died, but I guess they did a bunch of fancy drugs.
Yes.
And it turned them into, like, modern-day oracles.
More, people, well, like, that, they think so. You know, yeah, I don't know if that's true.
Miracle Man came and talked to one.
Yeah,
so
he did.
Presumably he would know, and it's legit. But they talk in kind of riddles. So the people were asking them questions, and Miracle Man actually shows up, kind of in disguise. He's wearing a hat.
Yeah.
And he basically asked the chick, he's like, did I do... Then he, like, asked her, did I do the right thing?
Something like that.
And she, I mean, it was hard to read because, you know, Oracle, she's on drugs, she talks crazy. She kind of indicated he didn't. Or at least what he did wouldn't last, which, you know, we know is true. It's not going to last. But it also showed that Miracle Man does have doubts about what he's done.
Yes.
And there was a lot of... There was a lot dealing with the weird, like, Bates cult. There was a woman in this who really wanted to buy a Bates t-shirt, and she asked the Oracle if he was ever gonna come back. He's coming back. It's gonna happen.
Oh, God. Yeah, if I can skip ahead a little bit, we saw the end of that resurrection where they brought back, what was it,
It was a Young Miracle Man.
Young Miracle Man, yeah, not kidding.
That was the other thing we found out in the back of the Silver Age. It's from his point of view.
Ah.
So, because he's a guy from an idealized version of the 1950s who's thrown into this new world. Now, I think what's going to happen with that is, because you got to remember, our whole thing is a lot of this world is really creepy. But most of the people don't realize it because they're living it. This is a guy who's being put into this world, but he hasn't lived in it from the start. So he might be someone who realizes how kind of fucked up this world has become, which will lead to the downturn in his last story arc. So, if that's what he does in that story, that's actually a really interesting way to go about it. But I don't know. I like this. The art was awesome, which it has been. The writing was strong.
Yeah, the writing was great. In fact, I the last couple of issues I've been kind of down on, and I told myself I'll read it because I have time. I'll see, give this one last chance. I read and I liked it.
Well, it was the end of the story arc, so he's hitting big points. A big part of this book when I'm reading it is I'm so creeped out by the world he's created that I want to see it come crashing down. Like, that's why I'm reading this book. I like the art, I like the writing, but I want to see this creepy fucking world he created to go away, and I want to see Miracle Man admit he was wrong.
And furthermore, I want to see him just melt down and be a bad guy.
I don't really want that, because the fact that he's questioning what he's done... If you're a bad guy, you don't do that. That's the one consistent thing.
Yeah, but look what he'd been doing prior to this. He's going forward with all these things, and every time he's met opposition, it's like he hasn't forced it, but he sort of just ignorantly just says, no, this is what we're gonna do.
Yeah, but here it showed he really is. They've done it twice now. He really is questioning what he's done.
Yeah, after decades, the world's been remolded.
It hasn't been decades. It hasn't been decades.
Well, okay, it's been years then.
Yeah, it's been a few years.
9 years.
So nearly a decade.
Yeah, but I'm saying he is questioning what he's done. And that's really important because he can't be a bad guy. A bad guy doesn't have a crisis of conscience because he doesn't have a fucking conscience. But Miracle Man does. So that makes him... He's not necessarily a villain, but he is kind of the antagonist, depending on what they do with Young Miracle Man. So, it's interesting how he set it up, and I have no idea where he's going with it, and I really want to see where he's going with it. This isn't coming out again until the beginning of March.
Yep.
That's not too long from now.
No, it's not, but we're going to have a month break before it comes back, and I hope to God, since it's the same creative team, he didn't finish the Silver Age. So we're going to be getting new material sooner rather than later. I really hope, given how much lead time they have, he's been fucking drawing this shit. Because if I have to wait 6 months between issues, I'm going to be pissed, and there's no excuse for it.
I love Sandman.
He's had 30 fucking years to finish drawing the story.
I'm still not ready.
I know he probably wasn't working on it, like when Eclipse went out of business and nobody knew who owned the rights. I'm sure that's the case. But fuck, dude. Marvel bought this shit forever ago and started publishing it. They said before they put out the first Alan Moore issue, hey, we're going to print Gaiman's run and then he's going to finish it. He knew from that point, you've had at least 4 years knowing that you're going to be working on this.
I want you to write a letter in case that happens and be like, you had 30 years to do this. Yeah,
just fucking do it, you piece of shit. I should not have to. I'm just saying, I should not have to wait.
You're so lazy. You had 30 years. Come on.
Yeah, well. Whatever. What's next?
All right. Next is Spider-Gwen number 4, writer Jason Latour, art by Robbie Rodriguez.
I enjoyed this. It was less funny.
Yeah, it was a nice little story. Harry, the Green Goblin, trying to get revenge for Peter's death on Gwen. He doesn't know Gwen is Spider-Gwen. And apparently he's gone through some sort of some shit through S.H.I.E.L.D. because she tried to reason with him, and it appeared that she did reason with him, but then he's like, nah, fuck this.
And he took a modified version of the reptile.
Yeah.
He took the goblin serum.
Yes. This is clearly the Green Goblin.
Yeah. And the goblin serum after, and he does know that Gwen is Spider-Gwen now.
At the end of the issue, yeah.
Although I should point out for people who don't read this, she doesn't run around with the name Spider-Gwen.
She's Spider-Woman.
Yeah, we've said a couple times, like, oh, they don't know she's Spider-Gwen. Well, no, they don't know she's Spider-Woman.
That would be pretty funny, though.
Yeah. Who's this Spider-Gwen?
Or, like, Gwenpool. Her name is actually her superhero identity.
Well, I mean, there are lots of women named Gwen.
But Gwenpool? Yeah. Spider-Gwen?
It's okay.
Yeah. I don't really have a whole lot to say other than, yeah...
This probably should have been a lightning round, actually.
Yeah, it should have. It should have. But I just, you know, we've been up and down on this book, and me and Marvel at least actually like this. So.
It's never been great, but it's been
It's a consistent book.
Yeah, I thought this went kind of an interesting way. I mean, she has a villain now.
It's a solid C book.
I think it's better than a C.
C plus then.
B-.
That's being generous.
Nah, B minus isn't generous.
Okay, next book, Sheriff of Babylon number 2, writer your favorite Tom King, art by Mitch Gerards.
Yep, and I really liked this.
Thing. Yeah, and here's the thing too. I didn't much care for Sheriff Babylon issue 1. I felt like there were too many characters. The story was bouncing around too much. And in this issue, we got less of that. Because it dealt primarily with just two or three stories, which I feel like the first issue dealt with like three or four. And especially when you have one issue, it's kind of hard to keep up with all the stories.
It was Chris teaming up with a member of what they were calling the Iraqi police.
Mm-hmm.
And the two are tracking down leads on the assassinated soldier. They showed the one female, Sophia. She's back and appears that she's like she's still pulling strings. She's like in the central in the Iraqi government, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So she's involved there, but it's kind of unclear what any of it means because they kind of just briefly show her. It was like she didn't have a lot of involvement. There's some stuff with you know, they go to a place where I guess they got a lead or something, and they end up finding a dead family, the Chris and the Iraqi police guy.
Ooh, this. Yeah, I like the emperor.
The cat there.
Yeah, he. I don't know what the hell was up with that guy. He just wanted to shoot the cat.
Yeah, he specifically brought up something. He's like, this something's up because he killed the entire family, but for whatever reason, why he left the cat alone.
Well, yeah. Well, his thing with finding the cat was he knew that someone had been killed there, and he also knew that if there's a cat there and people have been dead, the cat will eat them. Which is a thing which always disturbed me because we have cats.
Hey, don't you have like a ton of cats?
We have 4 cats. And I know for a fact if any of us died and the other ones weren't here, the cats would eat us. Dogs, by the way, don't do that. Like, they will after a really long time. Cats, they'll wait about 2 minutes and then they're fucking eating you. They don't give a shit.
That's hilarious.
People who love their cats remember that. Your cat will eat you if you die immediately. Bastards. No, but yeah, the cat's eating the people, and that was some fairly horrific art, actually. The American's just standing there watching this cat. And the Iraqi cop's like, hey, did you find the cat? And he's like, yeah. And then they're cutting back to the cat, and the cat's like ripping skin off the face.
Gross.
Yeah, it was. It was.
And to wrap things up for this week's books, Exo Man of War 43. Writer Robert Venditti, art by Rafael de Sandoval.
Really like this. Me and Marvel agreed we actually understood what was going on, but I finished reading this and said, fuck. Why didn't I read the first 42 issues of this book?
Well, to be fair, I think they did an arc before this, and I tried to get on Exo Man of War, and I didn't much care for the last issue I read.
Oh,
so.
It was the last arc about them, about the Trill colonizing on Earth?
It may have been something to that effect, yeah.
Because I imagine that's what it was, because the Trill are on...
The Vine.
Oh, yeah, the Vine's the Trill.
Yeah, Trill is the guy.
Yeah. And it's also, the Trill are also, Star Trek species.
Oh.
And I can see why Valiant produces the way it did. Cause initially we read that one Exo Man of War Zero issue, but it sort of tied into what they're going for in the current direction. So it made sense the way we read it, but.
Yeah, Trill is the lead heel. So
yeah.
It was good to get him across. Man. So many Valiant books deal with the Vine.
I know.
They are a big deal in the Valiant universe.
We're still trying to figure out how the hell some of them look human. Like, how do they do that? Why don't they all do that?
Plantlings. They
call them like seedlings or some shit. No?
Yeah, well maybe the Vine like put their genetic material inside people. And then the people who have that and who have kids, they're all connected to like the hive mind thing. I don't know, because they're not, because we found out in Imperium they're not considered real Vine. So
Exo Man of War and Ninjak teaming up, they hate each other.
Yeah, which I really liked. Instead of the normal, here's a superhero, they're gonna have a team up and they get along. Exo Manowar hates Ninjak because Ninjak is basically an assassin.
Yes.
And he's not for that. He doesn't like it. Even though his job is to kill all the humans who work for Trill.
Yeah. They're humans who are Vine. Who are undercover.
Yeah, because not all the humans who are Vine are with Trill. A lot of them are for the peaceful Vine who are living in Nebraska.
West Nebraska.
With the Visigoths.
Yeah, the new Visigoth Empire.
Yes, in western Nebraska.
with the rest of the Vine and the humans from that era.
Yeah, they all live there. So a lot of the Vine on Earth are with them. They're good people, but some of them have been converted by Trill and are evil. And some of them are in positions of power. So Ninjak has a list and they're going to kill all of them.
Yes.
They killed one of them in this issue. And I gotta say, if there's a lot of them, it's going to take a long fucking time because this wasn't exactly a clean assassination. They actually went through some shit trying to get this done.
Ninjak left a message for Trill, though, on the phone, remember?
Which Trill did not look entirely displeased when he was given this message. He left a message on one of the guy's phones like, see you soon, Trill. Eric and Ninjak. they gave Trill the message and he smiled. Which,
as evil aliens are supposed to do when they find that kind of information out.
Ninjak wants to draw him out. I don't think it's going to work, or this will be a very short storyline. Also, we saw in Book of Death, he doesn't die.
Oh. There you go.
he wrote, see you soon, Trill, Eric, Ninjak and Eric.
He signed his superhero name.
What a tool. All right. With that all the way, let's move on to our next segment, Book of the Week. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of the team. Everything is awesome. When you live in our dream.
Great feeling all time I had all my life.
Gentlemen.
I will go this week with Doctor Strange.
Ooh, that came out of left field a little bit. Okay, that's cool. I can respect that.
I should pick A-Force because you guys are dead.
in all consciousness can't pick that with books like Vision and Swamp Thing.
I'm going with Vision, by the way.
Okay. I want to give honorable mentions to Swamp Thing, Vision, and even though I talked about it and I really put over Vision, I ultimately want to put over Ultimates. That's my pick for Book of the Week. All right, let's move on to our final segment, next week's books. Wherever you go, whatever you do, I will be right here waiting for you. Whatever it takes, or how my heart breaks, I will be right here waiting for you. Okay, I got a big announcement for when we finally run down a certain comic book, so let's do our regular rundown, and then I'll do the big announcement once we come to it.
Okay. John Flood, number 6.
Yay!
Last issue, huh? Let's see if, let's see what they're gonna do.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, number
6. Yeah! No. Are you joking or no? That.
Yeah, I'm joking. Some jobber's writing it.
I don't care. I wanna read it.
And I never watched that show, cause I was too old.
I'm reading that book. Fuck you.
Go ahead. Okay. I'm not reading it.
So. Yeah, I'm not going to read that. Sorry, I don't want to miss anything, and I didn't. Normally, I pre-look at this stuff, and I didn't do that this time.
That's fine. Then you don't know the big announcement I'm going to do, then.
I don't know why you're teasing it like I'm going to give a shit.
Oh, you will. I guarantee you, and you'll have to do some somewhat quasi-heavy lifting.
Great. Slash and Burn, number 3.
What is Slash and Burn again?
That's the one about the pyromaniac.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
The pyro girl, yeah.
No, we dropped that. See, this goes a lot better when I look at it ahead of time.
I hated it when you just list things off, and it's just like it doesn't come off organic, and it's just like, okay, that's just a list. Blah, blah, blah.
But sometimes I have to defend things. And
we have Descender,
number 9.
Yep, Descender.
Huck, number 3.
Hooray!
Injection.
Wow, that came back. That's been a while.
I thought we dropped
number
that.
Number 6.
I was hoping we dropped that.
The last issue was really good, and everyone liked it. The memory of a fucking goldfish.
Walking Dead 150.
Walking Dead 150, alright.
That should be a big one. Special Exercise Anniversary Issue, 40 pages.
All New All Different Avengers, 3. All New Hawkeye, 3. I'll be reading Wolverine, 4. I'm not saying all new before all of these, fuck that.
Yeah, and I'm trying to write this down as you're listing them off. I wrote all new, all different Avengers, but that's it.
Okay, X-Men 3. Black Knight 3. Captain America, Sam Wilson, this is a heavy fucking week. Are we still reading Guardians of the Galaxy?
No.
No, I don't think so. Are we reading? Did you skip over Extraordinary X-Men?
No, he listed it off, but he just listed it as X-Men.
I did skip Extraordinary X-Men. We have All New and Extraordinary.
Oh, okay. We have both. Okay.
I'm gonna lightning round Illuminati because I like it, but I'm not gonna have you guys read it because we've got so many fucking books.
I remember liking the last couple issues, so I may make time for it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, just be warned. Mighty Thor.
You sound so enthusiastic. You say Red.
So many books.
What would you say after Mighty?
Red Wolf.
Thank
Red
you. Wolf.
Scarlet Witch? Nah, I'm not reading
no,
that.
No, we all agree
I'm
to drop
it
that.
I'm another shot, so I'm going to read that.
You're glutton for punishment.
Oh my God.
I know I probably should be reading it because that's the one that it's going to eventually going to cross over with Doctor Strange, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It kind of already is. Okay. Secret Wars 9 of 9.
All right, here comes my big announcement. With Secret Wars 9 coming out next week, we're going to finally pull the trigger on our Jonathan Hickman run of Fantastic Four giveaway. Now, the rules are simple. We're going to be doing our picks for Book of the Week next week. Be sure to listen. Email those picks to us at comicconversations1@gmail.com. And the first person to send those to us correctly will be the winner of the entire run. Now, this is all 10 graphic novels of the entire run of both Fantastic Four and FF by Jonathan Hickman, and the first person to successfully send those to us will be the winner. Not only will we be sending these domestically, but we'll also send in these international. So for the first person to send this to me, you will be the winner, and we will eat the cost, however great as it may be, and we will send this entire run to you. All right, with that out of the way, let's continue with next week's books, which include, from DC, we forgot to mention Neuromancer. For Marvel, we have Squadron Supreme, Uncanny Avengers, Web Warriors, and from Valiant, we have Death-Defying Dr. Mirage, Second Lives, and to round out next week's book, we have Ninjak. If it sounds like I'm doing this, listing off these books by myself, it's because I am. We had a couple of difficulties. The last part just cut off real quick, so I decided to very briefly mention the contest and then finish next week's books. But with that out of the way, I think this ends this week's show. So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out the show. And as always, see you guys next week. Adios.